Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Listening poetry, a different kind of poetry call-in show. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and tonight's very special guest is Avis D. Matthews. Avis states that the constant themes that flow throughout her work have been family, music, and words. She's the second of four children and part of two pretty large, close-knit families who are several generations deep in the African-American communities of Prince George's County, Maryland. Her early exposure to and love of poetry came partly through songs. The hymns she heard in church, the popular songs played on the radio, as well as the collection of jazz, sacred, R&B, and musical theater recordings her parents had in their home. There were always books at home, including old textbooks, the World Book Encyclopedia, I remember those, some African-American biographies, and the one that stands out in her memory, the Book of American Negro Poetry. I remember that book as well, which was edited by James Weldon Johnson and first published in 1922. She had learned about some of these poets during Negro History Week in school, so the book had an aura of importance to it. She imagined it contained not only the thoughts of great black writers, but also the history that was important to our people. That book also gave her the notion that poetry was a serious, serious thing. She took a poetry class in high school and probably wrote her very first poem in college. After college, she began a career in public libraries and surrounded by books, book-loving people and writers, she was motivated to write more often, although still mostly in her head, but also on napkins, receipts, or wherever there was a scrap of paper. Even today, she writes more poetry in her head than anything else. Avis is still in the process of growing and learning as an artist, and she'd like to be able to share her work more regularly and widely. She is happy to have published a few of her poems on her blog, writesinglaugh.blogspot.com. Please visit her blog. Some of her poems have also been featured in The Song Is, a poetry blog zine published by poet and professor Marianne Silk. Two of her poems have been contest winners on this blog. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce to you Avis D. Matthews.
Thank you, Michael.
Good evening, Avis. Good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm good.
Well.
How are you?
I'm great. Quite well.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I'm quite excited that you serve as a guest tonight. I think we're going to have a great time, and I look forward to hearing your fantastic work. Would you begin by favoring
you.
Us with one of your works?
Okay, sure. I'm going to read a poem. So I grew up in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. So I'll read a poem. I love the city. I love Washington, D.C. And have great, wonderful memories of the city. So I'm going to read this poem that I wrote a few years ago. Washington, I was really beginning to notice Washington, the city, changing. This particular morning, I was really focused on it. So I wrote this poem. It's called Going Not Gone. A March morning, we gather in Arlington National Cemetery, a few of us, where my uncle is laid to rest, taking in the serene sadness. we pass the marathoners on the way over and back, then drive slowly around Independence Avenue to catch another glimpse of King in stone. Cherry blossoms like debutantes and Miss America hopefuls line up sweet and proper along the tidal basin. The city is peaceful. On M Street near the Navy Yard, two preteen boys in Saturday clothes had the sidewalk to themselves. A black and white team, they sidle unaffected, unaware of a peering grown-up, perhaps yet unaware of a slightly older Florida boy who, just 2 weeks before, had been ambling down the block too, talking to a friend on the phone and eating a bag of candy. They break into a run, arms and legs flying, because they feel like running and are free to run down the city sidewalk in their neighborhood on a bright and quiet morning when there is no school. At Pennsylvania and Minnesota Southeast, the Yes Organic Market has made itself at home. My aunt points to something directly across the street. No one has bothered to pull down the Morton's department store sign atop the old building where dark people could get a job on the sales floor, buy cheapish clothes, put them on layaway, and look so fine and polished. Chocolate City is not dead.
Tell me about the Chocolate City that you remember.
Oh, gosh.
As a historian.
One of my most fun memories of... One of my most fun memories is when I was a teenager, Stevie Wonder did a concert on the grounds of the Washington Monument, Human Kindness Day. It was called Human Kindness Day. And that was in 72, 73, maybe a little later. Stevie Wonder also, so, and now that day kind of got, things got, I don't really remember this, but I've read about it since, and things got a little out of hand that day. It wasn't a full-fledged riot, but there was some fighting and all that kind of stuff. So while it wasn't not a pleasant memory, my memory of that day is just a lot of people gathering to see Stevie Wonder, and Stevie Wonder was really, you know, singing it, those wonderful songs that he wrote and recorded in the 70s, those songs about, you know, love and brotherhood and peace and uniting. And just being down there in the open air, seeing him and hearing him was fun. Stevie Wonder also, in D.C., before the King Martin Luther King's birthday was holiday, Stevie Wonder every January would come to D.C. and do a concert also on the Monument grounds, and I would go down many times to also hear that concert as we were trying to push through legislation to get King's birthday to be made a federal holiday. And, you know, everybody's familiar with the song Happy Birthday that Stevie Wonder did. So that was also a fun memory. When I was young, I didn't spend a whole lot of time in D.C. My parents worked in the city, so we would go in the city sometimes, you know, to their jobs. Sometimes go into the city for church, but it was really when I was a teenager that I became very aware of a full and complete and active and fulfilling place that it was. When I was in elementary school, we always took field trips to the museum. So I had a connection to D.C. That it was really the most important city in the world, and I loved it, and I loved being so close to it, really just, I mean, minutes away from D.C. So it's kind of, even now, it's kind of hard for me not to, it's hard for me to think about not living that close to Washington.
You've seen D.C. change in so many different ways, which I believe leads us into your next piece of poetry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're talking about this poem I called Gentrified. Yeah, over the past few years, hearing friends who live in the city still or who still attend church in the city talk about the experiences with gentrification. and gentrification in Washington, D.C. And so, you know, reading articles and talking to friends and seeing, you know, comments and things on social media about people's responses and reactions to the city and just watching it myself, watching it transform. I did write this poem a few years ago. So it's called Gentrified.
Right.
I pray, I implore, I beseech you, imperial conquerors, open your eyes, you namers and claimers, taking, grabbing, slamming gates, taking, erecting walls that block the sun, owning and rezoning, imperial conquerors claiming, renaming ball fields, playgrounds, mom and pop shops, obliterating memories of front stoop sermons, back alley fish fries, blue-lit basements where teenagers swayed and grinded to Smokey and the Miracles. Leaving no stone unclaimed, you have rebranded the street corner. I'm just about at the end of my rope, but I can't stop trying. I can't give up hope.
Beautifully written piece. Tell me about
that last
verse.
Line, you know, that last line is from Dawn.
Okay.
Tell me about
the verse. Obliterating memories. That starts with obliterating memories.
Well, you know, a friend of mine was telling me just about moving back into the city and, you know, finding only, moving back into the family house and finding only two or three of the older African-American families still living there. The character of the community changing, the character of neighborliness changing, you know, of folks knowing each other and helping each other out. And this, the despair in seeing that happen folks not being able to park in front of their own homes because of new parking restrictions, of code enforcement, city code enforcement, visiting the street far more often than they ever did to knock on people's doors and cite them for lawn care violations and those kinds of things that signaled that the city wasn't as friendly to the longtime older residents. And that they were also, you know, seemed to be working more for the newer residents or working at times at the beck and call of the newer residents. So there was moving back was not welcoming. It was unwelcoming. And it was also this sense of pushing people out. I even heard a woman on the radio, you know, say that her doctors are all in the suburbs. She needs her car, but she was being restricted from parking her car on the street. So, you know, driving through the city now, and, you know, there have been a couple of times when I have just been completely disoriented because the landscape has changed, you know. The Southwest waterfront landscape is beautiful, it's gorgeous, but there's a lack of knowledge among many of these newer residents about what the city once was. So, you know, there's sort of a claiming of all this newness, but an ignorance of how alive the city, you know, has been for many of us for decades.
Let me ask this question. Mm-hmm. Where do you write?
Oh, yeah. Well, as you said in the intro, I try to discipline myself to say I'm going to, you know, if something is in my head, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to put this on paper. So I'll write anywhere, really, Michael. I'll write in my car, not while I'm driving, of course. I write in the car. I write at home. But as I said, I just find scraps of paper because if I hear something in my head and I know exactly how I want to say it, I just want to get it down. So I'll just write it. And then later on in some quiet space, I'll sit down and, you know, give it real structure. But I don't have, you know, one spot like many writers do. I just kind of, I have more of a feel. You know, I want to feel a certain way. I want to feel a certain focus and a certain calm. And I can be on an airplane, you know, and feel that and write a poem, you know.
Right. Well, will you favor us with another?
Okay, I will. So let's see. So this is a poem I wrote. So a lot of my poems are introspective, you know, sort of self-examining or, you know, reflective poems. This is a poem I submitted to our friend Marianne Silk's blog,
The song is.
And yeah, and so I submitted this poem either last summer or a couple of summers ago, and it was voted a favorite. This poem is called Chicago, 1971, and it's a poem that I wrote for my aunt Dawana, and with her in mind because it's about her. Context is I was 14. Well, that says that in the poem. My sister, who's 2 years older than I am, my aunt, who's 3 years older than I am, the three of us flew out to Chicago to visit my aunt this summer. So this poem is called Chicago 1971. And if anybody can remember what just the whole vibe of the early 70s, you know, the urban vibe, daishikis and the music and everything, it was just a wonderful time to be there. That summer on Chicago's south side, my first visit, there was heat. "Please take off that blouse," she ordered. It was polyester and long sleeve, and it was making her hot. But it looked so good with my Peter Max hot pants. "Then just take off the bra." Liberated at 14. Back home in Maryland, on our street, where fathers and sons mowed lawns and washed cars on Saturday mornings, and mothers and daughters went to campfire meetings, I didn't tell my mother that her sister let me go out of the house like that. That's it.
That was a very rich, descriptive poem.
I had that memory in my head for so long, and finally, a few years ago, I said, I got to get this down. So, yeah. That was a fun
What's it like as you think about all of these memories, the history? What is it like to be a historian? I asked you earlier about where did you write. I guess I was also thinking that in terms of writing, that you sat in front of history books to...
No, it's, you know, I mean, being a historian studying history, it's really, more than anything, for me, it changes your perspective so that it changes your perspective on what you know and what you learn and what you see. So that, again, with that poem, with the other two poems I read, I'm always conscious of, I'm always conscious of what the context was, you know. You know, thinking about, so I, you know, the poem was not just in Chicago, it was 1971, and that was significant, you know, think about Curtis Mayfield and all the music.
Yeah.
You know, we think about, you know, women, you know, women's liberation, you know, we think about, you know, hot pants and big afros, and so, you know, I write, I'm thinking of, yeah, I have a sense of place and what was going on in that time. The other two poems, you know, writing through the city and knowing how the city once was, knowing what was once there in that spot. Seeing that sign, you know, we were driving that morning and I see that Morton's department store sign still on that building with the mom's grocery store across the street. And so, you know, I make this, Morton says it's historical relevance. So I see things in this historical context, you know, and I think perhaps more than anything, studying history compels you to ask questions, question, you know, how did that happen? When did that happen? How did that come to be like that? You know, to just look behind what you see, you know, and to understand that that didn't start today or yesterday. There's a story behind that. And to always be asking or wondering, you know, what's the story behind that and what's the story behind that story? So I think that's sort of, even before I started really studying history, I think that was something that was, you know, I was just very curious in that sense.
So it sounds like you want your readers to also ask questions. Maybe they can't ask them of you, but you want them to be open to hearing different and new ways of being.
Yes, yes. I mean, I think, sure, yes. I want people to, when I was teaching, it was always, you know, taught high school history, you know, trying to move beyond the literal, you know, so what are the, you know, what questions, when we look at this, we see what's on the page, you know, with the image or with its words, you know, but really trying to teach, you know, children to ask questions, because questions are, we naturally have questions. Questions are, I think, just moving through our mind all the time, but we don't stop and focus on them. We don't grab those questions, you know. We don't pay any attention to them. When we stop and pay attention to the questions, then it gives everything that we see or read more context. We start asking questions about it. We don't just take everything at face value. So, yes, I think. Yes, to what you said about
all right,
her poetry.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with Avis D. Matthews. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. Welcome to Quintessential Listening Poetry. A very special guest tonight is Avis D. Matthews. Avis, would you share another poem with us?
Sure, Michael. I think I want to read a poem that another poem that I said that Miriam published on her blog, the song is. This poem is called Metaphorical, and I think, you know, if you study poetry, you know, one of the things, of course, you're going to talk about is more metaphor. And as I was writing this poem, I didn't have a title for it, and I just said, once I read it over, the whole thing is metaphorical, so that's what I call it. So the poem was inspired by a local Washington area jazz singer, Laurie Williams, who many people know, Miriam's blog is called A Song Is, so I wanted to write a poem about music, and I had been listening to Laurie's CD, and I've seen her perform live, and I just impressed with the purity and authenticity with which she sings jazz, and so I wrote this poem. It's called Metaphorical. The song is a Pacific wave when Laurie sings it. Robust, graceful, high and climbing, screaming freedom, dancing, flying, flowing, catching light, sun ray, moonbeam, shimmering, shimmying, spinning, sparkling blue, so blue, swirling, soaring, cresting to a soul eclipse, to a cool, warm glide, to a daybreak stretch, to a healing within.
What is the relationship? Okay, I'm sorry, please.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, go ahead.
No, what is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. My speaking voice.
Because you're
my
very,
poetry
very
voice.
Melodic. Yes, your poetry voice. You're very, very melodic. So I was just wondering.
I also sing. I sing. I sing with the Heritage Signature Chorale in Washington, D.C. So
okay.
I sing, you know, and we just grew up, as I said, you said in the bio, I mean, there's music in our house. So it's always music, you know. And then I could hear Lori as I was writing this poem, because I was really trying to capture as closely as possible. I was trying to give just a visual and an oral representation of the way she, Lori just, she can carry, she take a note and just carries it and lifts it and lifts it and lifts it like a wave. And I really wanted to communicate that. The certain words in the poem, Healing Within, that's the name of, I believe, her first CD, Blue So Blue, you know, that's also from jazz. So I was using some of those phrases, but I think that with this one, because I was writing about music, I wanted it to have a feel of music. And I do hear, I guess I hear music in my in my head all the time. I'm always, there's always a song or something. Yeah.
Right.
So you're right.
Okay. Well, again, it's extremely lyrical, and as I was listening, I could hear the music in my head as well. So you were able to translate the words. I could hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
All right.
So
do you have another piece?
Could I do?
Please.
Yeah, I want to read. So, you know, now you may recognize these. So for those who are listening, Michael and I met in a poetry workshop, and in workshop there are different prompts and activities. And Michael, you might remember this one because I think you were the session leader on this one. So I'm sticking with this whole theme of metaphor, and so I wrote this short poem. And the prompt was a red balloon, an actual balloon. Do you remember this, Michael? Which you,
I do
you
remember.
Blew up. And the group was, balloon as a prompt. Use the balloon as a prompt to write a poem. And so this poem is called Red Balloon. Widening, rounder now, bouncing you go. Some breath is taking you higher, circling them, the ones who now watch you, who breathe sweetness and love and good into you, them who, no longer afraid of your boldness, ready to let you soar, hold on still, but with invisible strength.
Are you a red balloon?
Oh, God. Well, Michael, yes, I never thought of that, but yes, I would say, yeah, I am. That last one, so, you know, the metaphorical part, of course, is, you know, it's an actual balloon, but it's, you know, the whole soaring part and holding all visible strings. So it's like, you know, parents watching children grow, or teachers watching this, you know, breathing this life into them, and getting to a point where you're, you know, ready to let them go. So that's what I wrote. And I have been, so I would say yes.
Well, everyone, the call-in number is, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Please.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, so everyone, the call-in number is 646-787-1631, and we do have another person online, Avis, and I wanted to bring this person in.
Okay.
All right, let's see. Area code 414, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Michael.
This is Michael,
Michael,
yes. Yes, hey, it is.
Catfish McDerris.
Catfish, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
All right. Avis, do you know Catfish?
I know Catfish through Marianne's blog.
Well, Marianne, I've judged her contest for probably about 3 or 4 years, so maybe I was
uh-huh.
the one that voted for you.
Thank you. I was just on the blog today, and I was on Facebook, and I saw that you commented on something that she posted.
Oh yeah, she's a really good longtime friend. Michael is too, and he's got this buddy. His name is Wing Dog. This guy's a terrific poet.
Yes, he is. He is, and hopefully I'll have Wing Dog on this show.
All right. So now, are you gonna have your radio show for a while? Or are you gonna keep doing your paintings and branching out into all the arts of the world?
Well, I plan to focus on the radio show for a while,
okay.
Like with our great guest tonight, Avis. Avis, I'm going to give you a little break, and I'm going to recite a piece
okay.
of poetry just to give you a couple of minutes to kind of think and process. All right.
Please do.
All right.
You're great, Avis.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, what I'd like to do is to recite a piece by Pablo Neruda, and the piece is titled, If You Forget Me. I want you to know one thing. You know how this is. If I look at the crystal moon, at the red branch of the slow autumn at my window, if I touch near the fire the impalpable ash or the wrinkled body of the log, everything carries me to you, as if everything that exists, aromas, light, metals, were little boats that sail toward those isles of yours that wait for me. Well now, if little by little you stop loving me, I shall stop loving you little by little. If suddenly you forget me, do not look for me, for I've already have forgotten you. If you think it long and mad, the wind of banners that passes through my life, and you decide to leave me at the shore of the heart where I have roots, remember that on that day, at that hour, I shall lift my arms and my roots will set off to seek another land. But if each day, each hour, you feel that you are destined for me with implacable sweetness, if each day a flower climbs up to your lips to seek me, all my love, all my own, in me all that fire is repeated, in me nothing is extinguished or forgotten, my love feeds on your love, beloved. And as long as you live, it will be in your arms without leaving mine. As Pablo Neruda, If You Forget Me. Very powerful piece. Are you ready?
Beautiful. Yeah. I'm glad you went there. It's beautiful. I was thinking about doing it. I think I will do. Just something more introspective. I think that one of the things that I tried, or I used to think that I had to get away from, was writing, poetry that was so inward, that was so focused on, self and all. But, and so I've worked on that, but I still, I think it's almost impossible maybe not to write about, you know, oneself and one's feelings and one's thoughts. So I want to read a poem. And I wrote this poem. This poem is called You Have. And I wrote this poem when, and you, Michael, I know listeners can relate to this, when I was just, you know, going just through, you know, days and days of, you know, what you haven't done yet, you know, this, you know, in your life. You haven't done that.
Yes.
You wanted to do this. You haven't achieved that. You haven't gone here. You haven't done this. So it's just, you know, and I just got to what we, look, you need to stop. So I sat down to just write. Well, first, I just started to tell myself, look, you need to, you know, take the what you have not done and start thinking about what you have done. And so I wrote this poem called You Have, and this is it. You have not written the bestseller. You have not given your Tony Award acceptance speech for Best Supporting Actress in a Musical. You are not the latter-day Ida B. Wells, though in your heart you are. Stevie Wonder did not sing at your wedding. You do not regularly have deep conversations with your best friend, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You don't walk the halls of the Academy waxing wise and funny. But you have dreamed anyway. You have laughed in your sleep. You have sung through tears. You have danced with your sister. You have giggled with three-year-olds. You have rolled in the grass. You have heard Daddy recite Dunbar and Ma's rich alto tenor render Jesus Knows, Jesus Cares. You have been held in strong arms. You have inhaled the soft sweetness of Johnson's baby powder on baby brother's smooth brown bottoms and have chased their happy short legs down hallways. Loving eyes have smiled at you. You have counted stars.
Talk about the very last line, you have counted stars.
I think it just sort of came back to this moment of simplicity, you know, of just thinking about all the grand things that one can achieve. Or, you know, the things that one accomplishes in a day. And just, you know, I came back to this notion of just in the evening, which is quiet and calm, and you have, you know, as a teenager, my good friend and neighbor who lived across the street from us, we would, in the summer, we would sit out on the hoods of our parents' cars, you know, with the car radio on, listen to music, and we would just sit on the hood's cars and really look at the sky. And, you know, I thought about that, just the nice simplicity, the innocence, the warmth of that. And those were perfect moments, you know. And so I saw that as an accomplishment, something that you have done. And so that's just how I ended it, just making it very simple. You counted stars, and that's a beautiful thing.
I'd like to share a piece that I think fits the theme, primarily based on the word perfect. It's different.
Okay.
But I think in terms of looking at perfection, what does perfection mean to different people?
Mm-hmm.
It's called Black Alice in Neverland. And this poem is in my book, my new book, When Cherry Blossoms Fall on Black Skin. Black Alice was never perfect. Although she had perfect thoughts growing up in small town North Carolina, thoughts of her mama's sweet potato pie and hot watered cornbread sitting on the kitchen stove, thoughts of what the world would look like when she reached the perfect age. Now she's reached the perfect age, so where did her perfect thoughts go? Black Alice's life was never perfect either, although she would proudly tell any new listener she greeted that it was. She'd share heartfelt stories about her perfect family and her perfect husband who worked the perfect job. Never a day of complaint she'd proudly share with those who would listen. Those who knew her well shook their heads, chuckled in disbelief, and watched how that perfect lie would grow on her perfect tongue like a pair of old shoes forgotten on the front porch during a hard southern rain. Black Alice never sang in the choir, although she was often overheard singing softly in the back of the church, singing in perfect pitch and swaying proudly in an imaginary perfect long white robe, trimmed with gold, sacred hymnal in hand. Reading musical notes she did not perfectly understand, the glory of her uplifted voice made up for this small indiscretion. Yet in her mind, thoughts of perfection of what saved her each night, her perfect husband walked in, mad and swinging at the world, fists flying like fury, striking her face like lightning. Soon the storm would pass. A quick, "I love you, baby. You know I do," her perfect husband would softly whisper in her ear as he nibbled on her neck and planted a wet kiss on her raw, bruised, yet no longer perfect cheek. Black Alice sang on in Neverland.
Ooh, snap, snap, snap.
But just that thing of perfection, what does that mean? What does it look like? Where do you take that? Where do you go with it? How do you grow with it? How, just what is perfect? You know?
Perfection, yeah. Can you hear me, Michael?
Yes, I can.
Michael? Okay.
Yes.
Perfection. I don't know. I mean, perfection is a dangerous thing. I think it's a dangerous idea, because it really isn't. And I think it's, with that last poem I read, you have, it, you know, it's, the idea of writing that poem was to kind of, you know, tell myself, it's what people do, you know, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to live this perfect life. So I think teaching perfection, this whole idea of striving for perfection, I think striving for perfection is just a constant strife, you know, because you achieve something, you achieve the thing that you want to achieve. You may even achieve it perfectly, but there's always something else, you know. There's always something undone. So I know for me personally, you know, there is that feeling sometimes you think you nailed something, you got it right. There's always that one little thing, you know,
I know.
That, God, you know, but there was that one moment when I didn't, you know, I didn't do the right, or I said the wrong word, or I stumbled over a word or something, you know. So
yes.
I don't think perfection is a real thing. It's always this ideal, which is good. I mean, it's good to have that ideal out there, give you something to strive for, but I think it's misleading.
Yes. Well, everyone, our telephone number is 646-787-1631. I'm here with Avis D. Matthews, and we'll be right back. Michael Anthony Ingram, and welcome to Quintessential Listening Poetry. We have some other callers on the line, and I'd like to bring them in. All right, hold on 1 second. Caller 301, area code 301, and the first three letters are 710. Are you on the line?
I sure am. Hi, Michael. Hi, Avis.
Hello.
Hi, Catfish.
Hi.
Yeah, it's
welcome,
Marianne. It's great to hear everybody once again. I'm so glad that the radio show is back.
Yes, I'm glad too.
Me too.
I'm glad too. It's a lot of fun.
Hmm.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great listening to all of your poems, Avis, that, you know, I remember hearing them at various workshops.
Yes, yes, and the two that you published, too. The one about Lori, yes. Thank you, Marianne.
Thanks for the shout-outs.
Well, tell me, Marianne, tell me a little about the song Is.
Well, we are up and running, especially in the summertime. I am probably going to put the contests on hiatus. We just finished up one set of, oh, my gosh, contests that lasted for a whole year. But this summer, I'm especially looking for poems inspired by musicians born in the 1950s, like I guess Stevie Wonder would be somebody, and
he would be.
And of course musicians who were active in the 1950s, like of course Miles Davis and John Coltrane and Thelonious Monk and so on and so forth. So it's a pretty capacious theme or a pair of themes.
Do you have a question for Avis about her work?
How do you bring your teaching into your writing?
Ooh. My teaching into my writing. Marianne, that's a good one. I don't know. I'm formulating something. Something is formulated in my head in answer to that question, but I'm not sure what it is. It has something to do with it's kind of going back to what Michael and I were talking about before. It has something to do with asking questions, I think. It's me always trying to push or trying to get an idea across, trying to get an idea or a concept across. And so in my teaching, I was pretty dramatic, physically. I mean, I was expressive, not dramatic, but expressive. So because I was really driven to try to get ideas across, because in history, I mean, there's facts, you know, there's dates and places and names and all that. And that's easy stuff, but I mean, the way we want to teach history today is to get, you know, concepts and themes across and ideas. And so I think that's something that I also feel myself doing in my poetry. I'm very visual. And so with my students, you know, I'm always trying to create pictures, you know, or trying to, you know, taking a word, trying to get them to understand a concept. And so I use descriptions a lot. And so I think that that's the same. I'm a book. I always want to see it, you know, in my head, and try to figure out how I can teach that concept, you know.
Yeah.
And it's the same with, you know, with me for writing, just really taking a whole lot of time to see, you know, can put the words on paper, but once it's on the paper, does it translate to a visual, you know? Is somebody going to be able to see that in their head? So, yeah, I was often frustrated in teaching with myself, you know, or anxious, I would say more so, because I really wanted to just get them to see this and to be able to touch and to understand. It's hard teaching a concept, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the answer to you in there.
Thanks.
I'd like to bring in another caller. Thank you, Marianne.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Marianne. Go ahead, Marianne.
I'm gonna stay on the line.
Okay.
All right.
Great. We've got another caller here. Area code 301, and the first three letters are 807. Do you have a question for Avis?
Hi, Michael. This is John McDonald.
Hello, John. How are you?
Real good. We're like a family here. This is nice.
Yes, we are.
Like a family reunion.
It's like a family reunion.
That's right.
I just saw Marianne the other day. She at her work, the workshop she ran. It was great. Got some great feedback on a poem I worked on, and I saw you this about a month earlier at the first workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great.
Right.
It's great
right.
to hear your voice again.
Oh,
so,
thanks, John. You too.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I missed Saturday too. I'm in a town.
Oh yeah, we had a time. It was nice. It was really nice. It's great. And,
I mean, workshopping,
so,
Michael, if I can just say this, Michael knows it, to those of you listening, I mean, poetry workshops are just so beneficial. They are just so so important and necessary and beneficial, and there are just so many all over the city. So if you don't know of any, find me or Michael, Marianne, or John on Facebook. And they're friendly. They're not stuffy. And they're not hostile. So I think a lot of people are afraid to go to workshops because, you know, everybody will be published and everybody will be, you know, more brilliant than they are. But go to poetry workshops.
All right. Well, thank you, John.
Yeah,
good
so
to hear your voice.
I did have – yeah, it's good to hear your voice too. Michael just got in touch with me. We haven't talked for quite some time, and so I'm looking forward to getting back to getting and seeing him again soon. So I did have a question for Avis because I missed the first part of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you already asked this, and I apologize if it's already been covered, but you have a very simple voice that I admire in your poems, and very plain spoken. I really enjoy that. I really admire that because it's hard to do. And I'm wondering if you base that on any other poet that you admire and who that is.
Yeah, I don't think that I consciously did, but I definitely think I unconsciously channeled I think probably Nikki Giovanni. I would think that would be one person. You know, in the directness, I think, the directness and sort of the simplicity, you know, and also, you know, just the whole, you know, use of metaphors and stuff. I don't want to say this because I'm nowhere near as, I think, where I would want to be at the level of Nikki or Gwendolyn Brooks, but those are two of my favorites.
Oh yeah.
But I can clearly remember though, you know, reading Nikki Giovanni a lot, you know, and starting in the 70s, and so I think the way she talked, you know, conversationally, sort of just got into my consciousness. Yeah. So I would probably say Nikki. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, John.
You.
Avis, right. Are you ready to favor us again?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. Just a short poem. I'll just read a short one. Let me read this one. So this poem, I was trying to see if I could. I think, you know, we sit down and we want to write. We have an idea or something comes in our head and we start writing. Well, one of the benefits for me of workshopping was, can you write a poem when you don't have a poem in your head? You know, can you force yourself to write a poem? Or can you light a spark in yourself to write a poem. I have to write a poem. If somebody says, would you write a poem for my birthday or whatever, you know, can you do that? Can you you know, or does the inspiration have to come from, you know, just naturally, you know, out of the air? So I said, no, I want to write some poems. I want to try to do this, you know, without it just coming out of the blue. So I was walking a few years ago, you know, I would walk a lot around this lake in the mornings. And so I said, I started really having, you know, this sort of conversations really with the lake, you know, as crazy as that sounds. And so I started writing poems about or in reference to these walks, these 7:30 and 8 o'clock summer walks around the lake. So I'll read lake poems, and it's in three parts. Well, it's in four parts, but I'm just going to read three, I think. So, the lake in summer. The lake is relaxed this morning, unbothered, waltzing quietly, humming to herself as if she slept well. She is unhurried, like a satisfied hostess, the morning after company has gone. The lake wants something. She follows me, saunters beside me. She wants me to try her, come cool my heels and toes, let her drape her smoothness across my back and slip her sparkling softness around my shoulders like a soft, lovely satin. But will that satisfy her? Stretched out, lazy, lulling, she braces for the heat that has already leaned up against her and threatens to lay itself across her lap. The breeze we've been waiting for finally comes, sweeping ripples across her liquid skin and fanning mine with relief. We take a moment, then go our separate ways.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. Thanks.
What did you learn about yourself from writing this particular piece?
Oh, that's a great question. I learned that I did have the discipline to just to stop and focus on something, focus on two things, to focus on an actual physical object, you know, the lake, the trees and all that, and at the same time to think about how those things were making me feel, you know, thinking about the heat, you know, because at 8 o'clock in July and August it's already 90 degrees, you know. So thinking about the heat, how it's making me feel, how it might be making the lake feel. So yeah, I learned that I could actually say this is something that I want to write about. So starting there with this is what I would like to write about, and then, you know, crafting that as opposed to, you know, just hearing something in my head, being inspired, and just starting to write, you know. But, you know, like being given an assignment, as in workshop, you know, this is the thing, write a poem about it, you know. And I thought that, and I think I used to be more stiff. My voice would be more stiff, more forced. And so in doing that, I took my time and was able to really, you know, sort of personify the lake. You know, give it this personality, and write a poem about it. Yeah.
Right. Well, we've come to the end of Quintessential Listening, Poetry. I want to thank our very special guest, Avis D. Matthews. Avis, though, before we go, will you favor me by reciting God, Me?
Oh, yeah. Yes. I just had it. And, yes, here it is. Okay. So, God, me. Sometimes life won't let you sink, even after you've stopped fighting the tears, have stepped into the hole, laid down and curled up. God says no, and send someone to pull you out. I don't have answers now, and I want answers, but I have God. God, me too. God is the song that is in my head, now out of my mouth, riding the air, soon to settle on someone's heart, right where it's been pierced.
What is next for you as an artist, Avis? Usually when people hear an artist like yourself, they want to know, where can they buy your work? Do you have a book in the making? What's next for you?
No, I want to become a better poet, so I'm going to be going I'm going to be going to more workshops more regularly, is what I want to say. There's the poetry group. I can't think of the names of any groups right now. But
the DC Poetry Spot is one.
Yeah, the DC Poetry Spot. Thank you. That's the one I'm talking about. So I'm going to try to go more regularly to DC Poetry Spot. I was going regularly, and then I had to pull back when I was doing graduate studies, but I want to get back into that. Being around other poets really, really is inspiring. It's not intimidating at all, as I thought it would be. It's very inspiring. So I want to get back into the flow of that. Marianne is doing some workshopping that I started going to and I want to go back to. It also helps to be around, you know, different groups, different poets. You get different vibes, different thoughts, different input, different energy from different groups. So that's what I want to be doing. My poetry isn't published anywhere, and I just want to get good enough to publish. I also want to get good enough I want to get confident enough to do an open mic, which I kind of have done tonight.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of my thing. One of my friends and I, we keep saying we're going to do open mic, and that's kind of where I'm headed.
All right, then. Well, I'd like to thank you ever so much for being the guest. I mean, you're an incredible poet, and I look forward to hearing more of your work.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Michael. I'll talk with you soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Everyone, this is the end of our show. I'd like to dedicate tonight's show to our good friend who passed away, Dr. Mary Stone Hanley. She was a devoted member of the DC Poetry Project, and, again, she will be missed. So good night, everyone.